Hi, thanks for joining us today. This is Bonnie Wallace, author of The Hollywood Parents Guide, and today my guest on Hometown to Hollywood is the hilarious and extremely handsome Joey Bragg.
Thank you.
Joey is best known for his work on Liv and Maddie, where he plays Joey Rooney, as well as The Outfield, Mark and Russell's Wild Ride, Fred 3 Camp Fred, and he recently guest starred on Criminal Minds.
Yeah.
He also co-hosts his own podcast with fellow actor Kurt Long, Dudes of Future Past, which is extremely funny and which I do recommend. Joey, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I love that I'm here.
I love that you're here.
I also like that it sounds like I pretty much wrote that intro for you because you mentioned all my accolades.
I know how you like to be introduced.
I do. I like it. All you missed was Teen Heartthrob.
Oh, darn it. I knew I missed something.
Dang, Flabbit. We'll get it next
time. Maybe we can edit that.
Yeah,
in post.
Part two. We'll do part two. We'll put that in.
Teen heartthrob, Joey Bragg. When did you know you wanted to be an actor, Joey?
I don't know if I still know whether I want to be an actor or not. I always knew that I didn't want to do something like an office job or, you know, like 9 to 5. I just knew that I wanted to do something different, like unconventional. But I didn't really know what it was. Like, when I was in elementary school, we had, like, a yo-yo guy come to our school that did, like, yo-yo tricks and, like, made an Eiffel Tower. And was like, I went to Paris. Then he made an Eiffel Tower. And I was like, that is what I want to be.
Yes.
I want to be the yo-yo guy that goes to children and entertains them with tricks. And then I was like, got pretty good at a yo-yo, which, I mean, everybody that watches Maddie has probably seen.
I've seen it.
And then I just kind of threw that to the wind, and certain things came up kind of like that. I was a drummer for a while. I solved a Rubik's Cube really fast, but nothing really stuck. And then I saw the movie Funny People by Judd Apatow, and I was like, I get it. I get how stand-up comedy works. I've always wanted to be the funny guy in the room. So I was like, now that I understand how you write jokes, I started writing a lot of jokes and not performing them. Just like, I had a book that was just full of different premises and things when I was like 12. And then my brother found the book and was like, hey man, did you write this? He's really funny. And like, it was the only nice thing he's ever said to me.
Wow.
And so from that point forward, I went up on stage at a coffee house in San Jose for an open mic.
How old were you?
13. I just turned 13.
That's amazing.
Yeah. But it isn't, like, everybody says, like, oh, you have so much confidence at 13. But I think that it was a lot of just, I mean, my dad told me when I was a little kid that nobody can tell the difference between fake confidence and real confidence. And so once I learned that, I would, like, go around school thinking, like, I was the most confident guy in school. And then everybody would be like, he's so confident. I also watched, you ever seen the movie Fast Times at Ridgemont High?
Oh, like a million years ago, yeah.
Mike DeMone, the guy that sells tickets and, like, had that scene with the girl, and it was a big thing. I watched that movie when I was a little kid thinking, that's the guy I want to be. Like, I want that demeanor. I want everyone to think I'm too cool for school.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just kind of, once you fake confidence enough and people start believing it, then you start believing in the confidence that was originally feigned.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was just too full of myself to not expect that people want to hear what I have to say.
So you just assumed that it would go well.
Not really. I didn't assume it would go well. I just assumed that it would make me feel good. Like, when I first went up on stage, it was the weirdest thing, because I was up in a coffee house in San Jose, right after this, like, reggae band that set up, and then a guy was doing slam poetry, and I went up, and my first joke was about how badly I wanted to live in New York, but how afraid I would be every time you heard that Law and Order, dun-dun, because you know somewhere in New York, someone was brutally murdered. And so I didn't want, that was my first joke, and it was such an out-of-body experience to have this audience laughing. I remember feeling like it felt like I was looking up from myself from above. And then I got a good response. And, like, once you get that first good show, I couldn't stop. I was doing it every night since then.
So you were doing clubs, but when we met, and you were, I want to say, I think you were 15 still.
Yeah.
When we met.
Probably. I think I turned 16 on the Bits and Pieces.
Right, yeah, as that was happening.
Yeah.
So basically 16. You had, like, a lot of, like, real comedy clubs on your resume.
Oh, yeah, because pretty much in San Francisco there's, like, 4 or 5 comedy clubs. Some of the more prestigious, like, Cobb's Comedy Club, and then there are ones that are, like, ones I started at, like Tommy T's in Pleasanton. And once you get to doing that and you meet people and you get a good 5 minutes or 15 minutes down and then more people start inviting you, stand-up is kind of like a car going down a hill that the further you go, the faster it starts to go, and there's nothing really to stop it unless you just stop it. Like, you just get better and better and better, no matter who it is. No stand-up started really good. Every stand-up starts, and then you find your voice, and once you find your voice, then the ball really starts to roll. And so I think I found my voice pretty early. I mean, earlier than most. It takes some people years. It took me, I don't know if that's because I was young or because I was just full of myself, but...
Well, or maybe, you know, you have a gift also. I mean, a very funny guy.
It's the thing I was always able to rely on. I wasn't like handsome or nice or anything, but I could always make people laugh and I could always brush off any emotion I had with humor. And so it's just something I relied on and then was able to make a living out of it.
Well, so, all right, you're still not sure you want to be an actor. You're acting.
Yeah,
you're not alone in that regard, by the way.
Yeah, this business is awful. And so it's the kind of thing where my brother went to Cal and is doing data analysis in Washington, D.C. and has a job where he got the job and did the one interview and now he's set. And now, like, if he wants to keep working there, he can keep working there until he gets retirement and then retires and then can be retired and then die.
Like a so-called normal person.
Yeah, like a normal person.
Like what we think of as normal. I'm not sure that's even normal anymore.
But I mean, so much goes into this business and so many choices have an effect. Like, regardless of how big they seem in the moment, they can have a snowball effect on the end of your career, and everything you do has such an effect, and there's no, even, I mean, Denzel Washington or somebody like Anthony Hopkins, they're set. They don't need to worry. Or Drew Barrymore. They don't need to worry about the future. But everyone that's not the AAA list always is constantly stressed and anxious and worried. At least I am.
No, I think it's not just you. I think that is the nature of this industry. And I think that people don't really understand that.
Yeah.
Unless you are the top.
Yeah.
You know, the 1% of the 1% of actors, and those are names that we could all just name.
Oh, yeah.
And there's not that many of them. You have anxiety about where your next gig is coming from and whether you've jumped the shark in terms of your career or not.
Yeah.
And that kind of constant uncertainty emotionally, mentally, financially, is not something that I think most people can really live with.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody can comfortably live with it. And I think that the uncomfortable or the uncertainty about your future is kind of what fuels the passion to do it. But also, I think there are a lot of people that come and want fame over fortune, or there are a lot of people that come and want to be Paul Rudd or want to be the guy that's not doing too much on set but still gets to be around all the people on set that are cool. And just, they want the easy route as opposed to the only route, which is just hard work and longevity. I mean, if you stick around for a long time, you're eventually, I mean, not really, honestly, eventually, but for the most part.
Odds are decent.
Yeah, if you stick around for a long time, like a lot of people leave, your name gets thrown around enough times, but it's just, you're not an accountant. You're not like, you don't need to have somebody go, he's the best accountant, and then, okay, I'll hire him. It's like, you have to have that right part come for you. You have to have people that believe in you. You have to have somebody that's not the same type as you, that's more experienced, it's better. There's just so many variables that people don't take into account. And it's something like, when somebody's kid says, like, I want to be a movie star, they think, my kid's so special. You know, every parent thinks their kid is special. But it's not the kind of thing where you just bring them down here, they start a show, and then it's the rest of their lives. You're just kind of throwing away what could have been for just a chance that maybe they'll make it.
Yeah.
But a lot of kids drop out of school. Like, I didn't graduate, or I graduated high school, but I didn't go to college.
Right.
So if this doesn't work, I mean, I don't know. It's Baskin Robbins.
That's a conversation we could just skip right over to. So Ewan and Dove both took the Chispie.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And you came down here, bits and pieces turned into Liv and Maddie.
Yeah.
You're originally from the San Francisco...
Yeah, Bay Area.
Bay Area. It was like 5 hours north.
Oh, know? Yeah.
It's not like a commute.
No, but we made it a commute. We did that commute multiple times a week.
Amazing.
Yeah.
But then it was like, all right, I'm going to take the Chispie. Talk to me about your decision to do that and like how you feel about it then versus how you feel about it now.
For me, when I took it, it was for convenience, just in going from set and rehearsal, and then instead of going and hang and just relaxing when you wake up at 6 a.m. and rehearsing, and then going into your dressing room and having a seat and thinking about stand-up that you have that night, you would go into the room and sit there for 3 hours a day, whether or not you have 3 hours worth of schoolwork. You just have to log those hours, and it was just to the point where, I mean, I was a senior in high school. It was just, I was so close to finishing high school anyway. Chespi doesn't get you out of high school. It just gives you a preliminary GED.
Basically.
And so I was just, it was just, a kid that didn't want to do school anymore.
Yeah.
And my parents were okay with it. Everybody in Hollywood's okay with it because it lets you work more hours. So it was the kind of thing where I don't know if I would do it in hindsight, but I think if you were to give me 100 chances every single time, I would have done it when I was 16. Because...
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
At the time, it made all kinds of sense.
Yeah.
And you know, we did something really similar. You know, Dove technically finished at the end of her junior year, but she was 16
when
she finished with high school because she took the CHSPE. The CHSPE, for anybody who doesn't know, is the California High School Proficiency Exam. It's what allows a young actor who's either 16 or 17 to work as a legal 18, which means you can work adult hours, which is a big fat deal.
Oh yeah, sets. And that's a key to a lot of jobs.
If you're up against if it comes down to two actors, one of whom can work adult hours, and overtime, thank you very much, if it's needed, versus one who can't work that many hours. Oh, and also by the way, you have to have a set teacher and coordinate around that. There's no question who's going to get hired.
Yeah.
The legal 18 is going to get hired.
Yeah, of course. You
know, the 16 or 17-year-old who passed the CHSPE, or the kid who's actually 18 or 19 or 22.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of 20-somethings working as high school students.
Oh, yeah. There's
I'd
more
say
20-somethings.
Most
yeah.
of the high school, so-called high school students on the set of Liv and Maddie were in their 20s.
Yeah, yeah, for the most part. Yeah, they were around, at least around like our age, like 18,
19. 18, 19, 22, whatever, some of them older
than
that. So it's a whole other conversation, but you are actually... Maybe the first, well, except for Dove, person I've interviewed on the show here who's done that. And I personally feel like, okay, it was the right choice for us to make, but it's a really double-edged thing because just as you said, well, okay, it lets you finish high school, be done with high school, but that doesn't mean you can go straight to college. You probably don't have the credits to go to college.
Yeah.
And you're not going to go to college while you're a full-time actor, probably, because it's like, I'm sorry, you're already working more than full-time.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not adding college to that.
And this is, I mean, at least personally, this is the kind of business where there's no time to waste. At least, like, I'm just such an anxious and stressed person, naturally, that I feel like there's a constant impending doom feeling, especially, like, getting an audition a day takes your whole day. If you get a next-day audition, you have to learn the sides, which takes whatever, but you want to be comfortable enough with it. You should read the script. You should research what they've done. It takes
a
lot.
It's hours.
But it's also, it's nothing really, because you spend hours and hours and hours for a 10-minute audition.
Right.
Which isn't a job. It's not, like, I don't think acting is a job. I think acting is something that they pay a lot for that can be a job, but I don't think that when people say, like, I'm an actor, and... You know, you're always a barista, or you have something else to make money.
I'm an auditioner.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. There's nothing...
Somebody who drives across town every day, tries not to be late.
Yeah.
Uses my ways a lot.
It kills me. I can't just sit around and wait for something to fall in my lap. Like, it's just such a crazy business, and so many people don't understand how crazy it is, so they move here hoping that it's just, you know, you wait around, you get a couple jobs until you're big and don't have to work anymore, but it's never that.
It doesn't work like that.
Yeah, not at all.
No, and not only that, but the truth is, you know, whatever actors get paid, a huge percentage of that goes straight out the door to their team. And so, and then there's hello taxes. So what they're actually left with is a fraction of what their quote is.
And not even that, but there are so many companies and production companies out there that have found ways around SAG union rules or found ways around tax exemptions that will pay their actors the least they have to or no residuals, Disney Channel, for something that is, for them, saves them thousands of dollars, but also puts their actors that are working every day on this television show to, like me, I spent 4 years on a Disney Channel show, and you would think that, like, 4 years on a Disney Channel show, it paid, for a 17-year-old kid like I was, I couldn't have asked for a better job. It was an amazing job. But now I've spent 4 years on a Disney Channel show, and I don't have the residuals that would help me out.
That would help you pay the rent right now while you transition. And the transition's
just
not a joke.
No, transition. And it's not even really a transition. It's just kind of you spent the time working, and now it's like you don't have to work. Your audience is too young to support you in the things you want to do, so you have to find that middle ground.
Yeah.
And also, we're in that weird, I mean, Dove and I are both 20, 21. Mm-hmm. We're in that weird age where we're too old to play high school students for certain things, and too young to play high school students for other certain things, and too young to play college, and too old to play, like, younger Nickelodeon stars. So we're in that weird kind of dead zone.
It is a weird time.
Yeah, and so there are certain things that come in where you know you're too young, or you know you're too old, or, you know, especially being white.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you go in, and I got an audition the other day that was like, breakdown, Latino. or any ethnicity. And I was like, just say just... any ethnicity. Don't, you don't have to put Latino. You don't have to already make me feel like I'm not good enough. I would love to go in this and then be able to see a Latino guy get cast and go, oh, they wanted to go ethnic for safety. But as opposed to just going in not thinking I even stood a chance to begin with.
That is a fascinating conversation, that one. It's something that we all completely support, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Hollywood has got to get more diverse, and it's,
and you
know,
watch certain shows, there. And you're like, that is all a bunch of white people, and then they have a black friend that shows up,
yeah,
it's just not
on.
Natural.
No, it's,
yeah.
It's, the world doesn't look like that, and so
yeah.
it's time for casting to catch up with that, and that's an entire ecosystem that has to change. It's,
yeah.
The casting people say, well, you know, we can only cast from who gets sent to us, and so it's up to the agents and managers to start representing more people that are, you know, more diversity. It's like, well,
yeah.
Okay. So it goes all the way up the food chain.
But that being said, I also have a bunch of friends that are ethnic, like for Jessica Marie Garcia is an amazing actress.
She's
amazing. She's so well-trained, and just when I work on auditions with her, I am blown away every time. Yet she still gets auditions where they ask her to do a Mexican accent. She doesn't have a Mexican accent, right? She has to speak Spanish. And I understand that, like, sometimes you're casting a Mexican role, but when you're trying to diversify the roles and you're giving the Mexican role to the Mexican girl and the black guy to the black guy, it's not the same. Because that's not how the world is anymore.
Yeah.
You don't see a Mexican person and she is sweeping up and talking in Spanish. You see a Mexican person and they're just a person.
Yeah, or
and
maybe they're running the business meeting or something.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of diversity that has to happen. And so then for an actor, you're like, well, so why am I even here? So it's like,
yeah.
It gets weirder and weirder. I was just writing a blog post about this, actually, and frankly, because we've had a couple of similar experiences when
yeah.
Deb was auditioning more than she is at the moment, where she'd get called in for something that you'd look at the breakdown, and it just clearly
yeah.
was not anything that they were ever going to choose her for based on the description of what they were looking for.
Yeah.
Like, why do we spend a day of our lives preparing for this and driving across
yeah,
the town,
right?
getting stuck in 3 hours of traffic going back? But the thing that makes it worth it to me, as someone who advocates for actors and,
mm-hmm.
and is close to them, is, all right, you're getting in front of a casting director.
Yeah.
You're maybe establishing a relationship. You're maybe, okay, never going to get this role, but maybe they're filing you away for the future.
Yeah.
If you can knock their socks off.
And
also you're getting more experience. Auditioning
yeah.
is
and that's what,
thing.
Like, I mean, that's the only good part about auditioning every day.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can say that, like, I'm making a connection. But in real life, when I feel like I'm going to those auditions, unless I, you know, like, throw a chair across the room and cuss them out, I don't really think they're going to see me read that thing and then go, 2 weeks later, remember that guy that was in the midst of those 100 other peoples we had reading for it. It's just the kind of thing where you see all these people that are successful, and then you look back at why, and it's never the conventional way. I mean, Chris
Ever.
Pratt was founded a Bubba Gump being a waiter, and then was put into a movie, and then that's how his career started. And you think, like, why am I working so hard in an audition to play a juggalo that they want a Latino guy to play when he was just doing, you know, chum work at Bubba Gump?
Yeah, that we love those stories. We love those stories
yeah.
where somebody was, you know, so-called discovered. But those are the minority
yeah.
of success stories. You know, most people weren't discovered
yeah.
in some restaurant somewhere.
Yeah.
They worked their asses off for years.
Oh, yeah. And staying
yeah.
relevant is something that is incredibly important in this business, and that's something that a lot of people frown upon when people, like Miley Cyrus, for instance, after Hannah Montana, went bananas and, like, did the whole opposite of Disney Channel and showed her boobs and did a song that wasn't appropriate for her usual audience. And you think, like, how inappropriate for her to, you know, kind of spit in the face of her children audience that loved her in Hannah Montana. But really, we would not be talking about Miley Cyrus had she not done any of that.
At all.
Or the guy Orlando Brown that's making news because of what he's saying about Raven Simone, the guy from That's So Raven. We wouldn't ever remember his name had he not had that weird interview. There are just certain things that you do to have to stay relevant, and some of it you have to suck up your pride if you want to be that kind of performer or actor.
Hopefully, it's all stuff that can stay inside of your own sense of integrity. I mean,
yeah.
we see this. We see this every day. People
yeah.
are making interesting choices to stay relevant.
But the sucky thing is that when you're sitting at home and writing a pilot that never gets made, or sitting at home and trying to work on stand-up bits, and then it's not going to help you stay relevant if you are already in the limelight for a bit. Like,
yeah.
staying relevant is something that is super important. I mean, incredibly hard. You look at
yeah.
all those other Disney Channel actors and you don't know their names, but you know their faces and you haven't seen them since. It's because staying relevant is something that is more important than talent, is more important than being kind when you're working. And I think that that's something that frustrates me to no end.
Yeah. You know, this is something that people don't talk about very much. It's funny because literally millions of kids want to be on the Disney Channel. And I actually get kids, I have a lot of high school and college kids who reach out to me. And a lot of them say that that's their dream specifically, is to be on the Disney Channel. And my thought is always like, man, okay, you need to want to be an actor, first of all.
Yeah.
And you're not even sure you want to do that. Like, you've got all kinds of different skills that are applicable, frankly, to a whole bunch of different things in this industry.
Yeah.
A lot of different places that might make sense for you besides acting, on top of acting. But let's be frank, the track record of kids leaving the Disney Channel and then successfully transitioning on to an acting career as adults, not a great track record.
Yeah, but I mean, that's not a great track record for, I don't know if it's Disney Channel or just actors, period.
Well, maybe that's exactly the point. And
yeah.
Maybe we see more of, maybe Disney Channel gives more work to kids than anybody else, which is true.
That is true, yeah.
And so we're looking at them, but like maybe the problem is really not about them at all. It's about like how many child stars do really transition successfully.
Yeah, or just how many people, you see so many people in shows that you don't know their name,
mm-hmm.
and then you probably will never see again. And I don't think that it's just Disney Channel. I just think that sometimes you book a job, and then most of the time you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And that you just gotta wait for that one job to fall in your lap. And there are so many people, like the people I look up to are the people that don't wait for something to fall in their lap. And like the Broad City Girls that made their own show, or the It's Always Sunny cast, or Ricky Gervais, or people that, you know, saw that they had a voice that they wanted to get out there and then made that happen, as opposed to waiting for something to fall in their lap where they can then show their voice in an acting kind of place.
I'm so happy you brought that up, because honestly, that's one of the most exciting things to me right now, is how much you can get your own hands on your own destiny because of the tools that are available to people that weren't even in existence 10 years ago.
Yeah.
There's YouTube.
Oh,
There's every way to create and communicate. Like, look at you and Kurt, you're doing this podcast.
Yeah.
You know? It's exciting, and you can write a screenplay, and you can get it out to people. You can do all kinds of things. You've got cameras. Hell, you can shoot an entire movie on your iPhone now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there's also something when you look at, I mean, this is a whole other conversation, but this business right now is going through one of the biggest changes it has gone in since the 30s. Since studios stopped having people under their payroll and only casting the people that they represented, that's the biggest change that we've had in Hollywood, is the fact that new media's come along. And people like Netflix and Amazon and Hulu can make shows for dirt cheap and pay their actors pretty much not that much at all, and then be seen by more people than NBC and CBS, because there's no big people in suits anymore that are telling you what is appropriate to watch. It's just anybody. If you want to watch a baby throw a knife at a cat, you can Google baby throwing knife at a cat and it'll be there. Entertainment is instant now. So you go to Hulu and you don't find a show you like in the first 15 minutes of the pilot, that's not something where you go, okay, well, next week I'll watch it again. You don't. You just say, okay, I'll find something else, because there's an infinite amount, not infinite, but pretty much
an
infinite amount of entertainment.
Essentially.
Yeah.
More than we can possibly consume.
Yeah.
Which makes it effectively infinite.
And I think the fall of multi-camera sitcoms is kind of on the downhill.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the fall of network television and just major broadcasting companies is also on the downhill. Because,
well,
you see,
ratings are changing because people are changing the way they watch anything.
Children.
And what they watch.
Yeah, I mean, Disney Channel and Nickelodeon are falling because every kid doesn't want to be forced to watch something like that. There are kids that love the entertainment, but there are also kids that, you know, they have the internet, so they don't need to be spoon-fed things that are appropriate, quote-unquote, for their age. They can Google something, and it is, they have age restrictions, or there's like YouTube Kids now where they try and keep it. But I mean, when I was growing up with the internet, I knew everything before I should have. And I think that's something that people have to, rather than try and block away, just accept.
Well, and that's where education comes in. That's where communication comes in. And that's a family situation.
Yeah.
You know?
But I mean, also, it's a family situation that then crescendos into the rest of how they're going to be an adult.
A culture situation.
Yeah. Because with Netflix now releasing a whole series at a time and doing that, that was unprecedented 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So now when you write something, you have to think of, how is it going to be digested? What platform am I looking for? And also, is there an audience for it? Because you want to write something that's true to you and hope that there's somebody that agrees with you. But then also you look at PewDiePie. The most subscribed person on YouTube plays video games and has people watch him. And if I were to think of a show and was pitching something and thinking, all right, I will play video games to have people watch me, I would think that's ridiculous. Nobody wants to watch me play video games. My least favorite part about playing with video games with friends is when I'm just watching them and not playing myself. Yet, he has millions upon millions of fans and is making millions of dollars. And it's the kind of thing where that just makes you lose hope when you want to do what I want to do, which is be the stand-up that then has a show or has a late-night talk show, because it's there's nothing to base it off of now, because nobody knows what the future is going to look like.
Yeah, back in the 70s, it could have been, you know, the Joey Bragg show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and that was a legitimate, like, that was that variety show.
Yeah.
Where there was comedy and regular guest stars and new guests every week. Like, that was a thing.
And now there's things like Con Man, like Nathan Fillion and Alan Tudyk's show about guys that do conventions like Comic-Con all the time, was crowdfunded, made millions of dollars by just fans that wanted to see it, and now they're able to make a show with no suits to telling them what they can and can't put in, and it's doing very well, and it's an amazing show, and they're making it all on their own. And that's something that, like, that is what I want to see more of, as opposed to seeing people vlogging about their day and kids, which I used to watch, and I understand I got bored of it, because people are usually boring, and I understand that sometimes people like reality TV, and people have different tastes. But watching, but not knowing what is going to be the next thing is just adds to the stress.
Yeah, yeah,
because
you
already don't know what your next thing is going to be. But not knowing what your next thing is going to be on top of not knowing what the business is going to look like in 5 years is just
another. It's crazy pants. It's a lot of layers of crazy. I'm so happy you're talking about this because I think that people who want to get into the business, in many cases, don't have the first idea about how many layers of uncertainty there really are. And the fact that the business itself is structurally changing so much.
Yeah.
I mean, music's like really the Wild West. Music makes this look good.
Oh, yeah.
You know. So I want to loop back a little bit and just ask you about, like, your life before I know you, when you were, say, 16, and you've been here for the last 4 years or more now. Oh, my gosh. We're going on five,
like,
aren't we?
I think I've been here about 4 years. Because I moved right as we started shooting Liv and Maddie.
Okay.
The day I moved was, like, the day before we shot.
So what was your school experience like when you were just a kid, like, coming through before all this changed?
Pretty normal, I think. It was, like, I was never... I looked like the kind of kid that would be bullied all the time, but I wasn't. So, I don't know. It was... school is such a... such a different world. Like, I wish I could go back and tell myself, none of this matters.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to remember any of these people's names come 4 years from now. Just absorb everything you can, because the worries that you have and the things that you are, like, stressed about back then are just so unconventional. Like, I wish somebody would have gone, hey, adulthood, awful. It's awful. There's stresses about rent, stresses about needing to make a doctor's appointment, and also you never know when your next job is going to come in. And like, I wish that I would have known that... I mean, I guess I did, because I did. I mean, I went from 13, I was doing stand-up, so I guess I was always an adult in the kid, or a kid in an adult world,
mm-hmm.
since I was about 13. I was always felt more mature than the kids that I was around in school, so I think that's just because I think I'm better than everyone, but I don't know, school was never something where I feel like it was shaping who I was. I feel like I was who I was in amongst people that either got it or they didn't. Like, mm-hmm. I never had a huge group of friends that was always around. I just kind of floated between groups of friends, and there was never, like, a concrete group of friends that I had
mm-hmm.
until I grew older and then started doing stand-up and started moving down here, and then I had friends.
Yeah, then it's like, oh, these are my people.
Yeah. And, like, people that, like, understand want to do the same thing I want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's huge. I mean, I think it's important for anybody to define their tribe.
Yeah.
Have you done any training, any acting training at all?
Yeah.
Or is it just, like, learning by doing? Or
I mean, I have, like... Not really. I have, like, an acting coach that I go to for certain auditions, and I feel like I've learned a lot from him, but obviously I haven't been to an acting class, and every time I audited a couple acting classes...
Not obviously. I mean, for all I know, you do it every summer or something.
Yeah, well, I mean...
Like, I don't know.
I think acting is one of those things where, like, there's a difference between people that are classically trained and people that are just learning from doing, but I also think that I don't ever feel like I'm very good at it. I feel like I trust my opinion of what I think I should be doing, but there's no part of me that thinks I'm better than the other people that are going out for my thing. When I go to an audition, my mindset isn't I'm going to blow them away with my reading. My mindset is I'm going to introduce myself and be personable, and they're going to like Joey and then think, oh, I like Joey enough to have him be the character rather than I like Joey's portrayal of the character.
That's so funny.
Yeah, it's a weird. I always feel like I am not like I'm cheating. Like, I have, like, worked my way into this, and now I'm... There's so many things that I want to be doing that I'm not doing, and it's not because I can't do them. It's just laziness, and it's a lot of, you know, stress can really hurt you. And I think that, I mean, I want to be going to stand-up shows every night and doing that. I want to be, you know, writing more. But then when an audition comes in, I do that. And there's just so many things. Balancing is a hard thing in this business.
It is. Well, and it's like your schedule's so unpredictable because it's completely at the effect of whatever shows up in your inbox late at night or first thing in the morning. It's like, oh, I was going to do this today, but now I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
I was going to go to the dentist, or I was going to go write my thing for the stand-up, but now I'm going to, you know, learn a bunch of sides and go drive across town.
Yeah, exactly. And so I'm sort of trying to balance everything. I feel constantly like I'm not doing enough, but I think that that's the only way to do what you want to do is to feel like you're never doing enough.
I think you're right. Well, so you use an acting coach. A lot of actors use acting coaches for, like, higher stakes auditions, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then, any hot tips for auditions? It sounds like you sort of just go in there and be yourself. But like if you were talking to somebody who was just trying to break into the business, what would you give them? Any valuable advice around auditions?
I mean, I feel like I got in through such a back door. People ask me all the time. yeah, right?
That's one of the reasons, too, truthfully. We talked about this a little bit before we were on the mic, but one of the reasons that I didn't include your story in the Hollywood Parents Guide, it's true, I thought about it. But you have the most unusual story in terms of how you got into this business.
Yeah.
And while, like, I kind of love how unusual it is. Like, you were a young stand-up comic. What the heck?
Yeah.
You know, there might not be anybody else out there in the country that falls into that category. Yeah. It's like, okay, so it's good to see the outliers, but you're such an outlier.
Yeah, right? And there's a lot of, like, there are a lot of kid comedians, and you see, and there's this kind of overlooking thing where, you know, the parents write the jokes, the kids are just eccentric enough to perform them. My dad has never wrote a joke or a tag, mostly because he's not funny. He's a dad, so I think he's funny. I don't think anyone else does. Sorry, Pops. But it was also one of those things where everybody assumed that he wrote my jokes, and so it was this constant frustrating thing where no matter how well I did on stage, everybody gave him credit. Not everybody. There were a lot of people that understood.
But assumption would be that your dad probably wrote your material.
And so I was always...
It's a very smart material. I saw one of your stand-up shows early on. You're probably 16. And
yeah.
It was like at the Burbank...
Flappers.
Flappers. Yeah. It was really funny.
Thank you.
And it was clearly really you, too.
Yeah. I mean, I've been so... My favorite thing when I was a kid was making an adult laugh. Because making kids laugh is easy. You fart in a tube and it's, you know, that's it.
Yeah.
And that's the funniest thing I've ever heard. But I used to be so... My least favorite thing is when people are condescending. Or ageist. Like, I'm a huge proponent for people being ageist. I know this started with, what advice would I give?
So we'll get there. I'm gonna
take
you back to it, all right?
but it's something where this business is so condescending. Every single person you're going to meet is going to treat you like they want to treat somebody that's going to make them money, or treat you like somebody that isn't worth their time. And so there's just finding somebody that treats you honestly is so hard, and that's something I can't stand. But... it's the kind of thing where I got in through such a back door and was always a kid in an adult world that I feel like when I moved down here, I was kind of beaten enough to where I was numb when things like that happen. Just not beaten, but like when you bomb on stage, if you bomb in a theater performance or you miss a line, you can feel as bad as you want, but then the rest of the cast was there. Or you're in an improv show and you make a bad joke. The rest of them are up there. But when you're doing stand-up and you bomb, you have no one to blame but yourself. You can blame the audience, but winning over an audience is one of the biggest parts of stand-up. And so I think when kids ask me, like, any advice, I don't ever know what to say. Because I feel like I got in through such a back door, I wouldn't recommend it, honestly. It's the kind of thing where if I could write for something and do stand-up and be able to make a living out of that... I absolutely would.
I can totally see you doing that, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, it's easier said than done.
I know. Well,
yeah, you don't really get paid for stand-up that much. And I love acting. I love it. I have the best time, especially with things like I just did Wet Hot American Summer.
Ooh, that's
and working
so
with
exciting.
All those people
that's
I was
huge.
Like, yeah, I look up to. And that was an amazing thing. And improv was always something I was a big fan of. So integrating that. But doing something like, I mean, I did Criminal Minds. And I had a blast. And it was an amazing thing. But just standing, it's not... what I was, I don't love pretending like I'm being beaten up by bullies. Or I don't love, I liked it, and it was something new, and I got to stretch that different muscle, but I wasn't comfortable enough to where I was like, I trust myself completely with this.
Yeah.
And there are other things that I'm not doing where I do trust myself completely with this. And I think that's kind of this whole business is something where you never know what you're going to be doing. You can want to be a composer as much as you want, but then you move down here and you can't afford to just be a composer. So then you get a job as a PA and then you work your way up that ladder. And it's just, there are just so many different ways to make it and make money in this business that I think people kind of idealize it so much. So when people ask me, like, what do you suggest? I don't know what to say. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the time I'm just like, you know, make a YouTube channel and just film videos or, you know, as much as...
That's not bad advice.
Or write, yeah, because it's not the kind of thing where you can just come down. Every parent thinks their kid is special. That's something that I've learned, too, with being like this, with being on the Disney Channel. Every parent will come up to you and be like, my kid, you know, look at her. She's so beautiful, and she has a beautiful singing voice. She wants to be just like you. Is there any advice? And I'm like, yeah, go to school and be a normal person. Because there are so many people that think this is the biggest fish in the biggest pond. And there are so many people that think they are special. But it's not about how special you are. It's not about, really, how talented you are. It's just luck. Like Bo Burnham said in an interview the other day, he said, having Taylor Swift say, like, you know, your dreams come true, do follow your dreams, is like a lottery winner saying, to liquidate your assets. Liquidate your assets. Buy lottery tickets. It's just, it's such a Russian roulette of whether or not it's going to work. I don't know what to say. So my advice is, you know, you think your kid is special. I'm sure your kid is very special. There are a bunch of special kids here. And it's not the kind of thing where a kid is going to grow up in this business and then be a normal person. You grow up and spending so much time with so many kids that are here since they were six. And when I was like 17 and hanging out with those kids, and they don't have good heads on their shoulders. It's not that they think that they're better than everyone. It's just they think that there's a different class. They think the world is different. They grew up in Los Angeles and they think that the world is a different place than it really is. But you see that when with Trump winning, everybody assumed that wasn't the way it is, but the world is a much different place. And so it's just not the kind of thing that I would suggest anybody to do when you see your kid singing in a choir and she has a gorgeous voice. Awesome. She'll be the star of her high school choir. But it's such a throwing something at the wall and seeing what sticks, and you never know.
There's so many variables, only a few of which are in your own hands.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, my parents were both teachers. If I didn't start in stand-up, and if my dad didn't have an incredible timing with getting paid administrative leave when they thought that he had done something to a kid that he had never done, but got put on 8 months paid administrative leave, that we wouldn't have been able to afford it. There are so many families there. I mean, a big part of it is money.
Huge part of it, and people always underestimate how much it's going to cost to come here and then stay here, and things take longer than you think they're going to take.
They take much
always.
Longer. Yeah, you think about, like, there are so many families that a lot of people moved from Florida, and a lot of people moved, you know, from all over the place or uprooted their families, and it's just, it's not worth it to me.
Well, let's talk about some of the challenges then. So you guys were really fortunate. You had this fluke situation.
Yeah.
Where your dad was actually able to be down here with you for the whole first season. Wasn't the whole first season.
No,
right.
Yeah.
Half the first season, but for, you know, all that of Liv and Maddie. And then it was like, okay, now what?
Yeah. Yeah.
We're teachers. We need to work.
Yeah.
We're real people with,
a
mortgage.
I mean, and teachers, especially in California, don't make that much. So my parents having to support... You know, it was a family of four, me and my brother, and we couldn't pay mortgage if just my mom was working down there. My dad was paying rent down here.
That's
and it was
real
just,
life.
Yeah, absolutely. And even with what you're making on a show, it's still hard. It's still a hard business to make a comfortable living out of. And so it was just the kind of thing where I've always felt much more mature than I've looked. And so I feel like when I was 17, it was okay to have my parents move away. Hindsight, absolutely not. I wouldn't have had them do that. But when you're a 17-year-old kid and your dad says, so we don't have very many options here, one of the options is I move away and you live by yourself illegally, of course I'm going to be like, Animal House, sure, let's do it. But, I mean, hindsight, it would have been nice. You know, I miss my family, and I don't see them all that often. And a lot of kids, you know, I have a very strong connection with my parents, and I call them every day, but it's... I don't know, because it's not like your kid's going away to college. It's like your kid is going, like, it's like trying out to be an American gladiator of a kind of business. You just never know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And there are so many people trying to take advantage of you, and everybody is seems like they have your best interest at heart, but none of them do.
Well, and they have their own best interest at heart, which may occasionally align with yours,
but
you cannot bet on that.
Yeah, of course. And so I think that I was very lucky to grow up in comedy clubs from 13 on and spend so much time with already cynical adults, because when I got here, I felt like I had a thick skin. And a lot of people don't have a thick skin when they get here. And a lot of people, there's so many people that do horrible drugs. Like, so many Disney stars that have that thing because they were just kids. And they were kids acting and working and doing school and weren't in school and weren't around kids their age. And then they do a Disney Channel show. And then from the Disney Channel show, they're like, all right, here's the real world. And it's not the real world. It's L.A., which is a weird version of the real world, but still the real world.
It's real. It's not unreal, but it's its own thing.
Yeah.
It's not like the rest of the world in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and so I think that, I mean, a lot of kids don't understand how it works, don't understand how the world works, don't understand to look out for their best interests, don't understand to question everything.
Don't
ever take anybody's word for what they're saying. Think about what they're going to get from you, and just think about, like, the decisions you make, because everything can affect you. You can have if you are caught doing anything bad, if you're caught, I mean, smoking pot somewhere and on Disney Channel, that could end your Disney Channel show, and then that will look bad.
It could end your whole career.
Yeah,
if the timing's wrong, it could technically.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends.
Smoking pot is different, especially
now. In California, but
yeah,
still.
Yeah, it's one of those things where there are so many variables that people don't take into account, and it's just such a one in a million chance. That I just wouldn't... my whole thing is that I sound so cynical, but it's the kind of thing where I was such a special circumstance, I don't know. I don't think I would have been here. I don't think I'd still be here if I didn't start and stand up and I didn't have that amazing first Disney Channel job. And I don't know what I would be doing, but I don't think it would be staying here and hoping that something happens, because it's just... I already have so many good connections that I feel like I at least have people around me that believe in me. And I can do something.
Yeah.
And I'm full of myself enough to feel like I can do something and people want to listen to me.
Well, you've got a great track record and you've got enough momentum at this point that it's a reasonable bet.
Yeah.
I think.
But I think there's no betting. I mean, you never know.
But that's what it is. It's
a bet. Yeah.
not like, you know, you're not signing up for college. Okay, I'm going to be here for the next 4 years.
Yeah, and then getting bachelor's degree in economics, then, you know, getting a job. It's just there's no certainty. And then when you do it, and a lot of kids move down here when they're very young and work and work and work, and then there's nothing else they can do because that is all they know. They didn't really go to school. As much as you want to say, like, you were six and you went to studio school, that's not school. They're not really teaching you anything. You're sitting on a laptop and while someone watches you, quote unquote, work on your schoolwork. Like, it's just, there's nothing to teach you anything other than how a studio operates and how to act and how lights are set up. And then you get to the real world and there's nothing else, and your only option is waiting for that one perfect job to fall in your lap.
Which, yeah, that's a big bet to be making.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's no, because being in Disney Channel, and, like, taking pictures with kids is something that kind of I feel like mirrors what parents think about their kids when moving them down here. Take pictures with one kid, and then you have to go film something because you're at Disneyland filming something, and then every parent is like, my kid, because their kid is the most special.
Yeah.
Everybody thinks their kid is the most special. And so when their parents moving their kids down here, it's not like they're moving their kid down here because you know your kid has the best voice and can be any character he wants to be. It's just you're moving him down here and hoping that somebody sees the same thing you see. And it's just such a, I don't know, it's just such a weight to put on a child's shoulders. There are so many kids that have to then support their families, or their families can't pay rent. And I know so many kids that, you know, were responsible for paying rent. And that is nothing somebody like that should have to experience at such a young age.
That's a whole conversation.
Yeah.
It's interesting because in the state of California, it's technically illegal. Like, the child's money is the child's money.
Yeah.
It's not family money by law. But in the rest of the country, just about, I think New York is like us that way too. Whatever the kid makes, hey man, it's fair game. It's family money. So
yeah.
A lot of families are like, hey, my kid's going to get rich, we're going to be rich.
Yeah.
But it's like, no, actually, that's against the law here in California. Well, it doesn't mean that people don't break that law all the time.
Yeah.
And it also doesn't mean that there's not reality. Like, well, okay, we've liquidated all of our assets.
Yeah.
Actually.
There's that word.
We sold the farm to give you your shot, and now what? You know, you need to help pay the rent. And that's like, oh, that's a moral dilemma.
Yeah.
And that's, but, you know.
Yeah, of course.
Those are the moral dilemmas that people face who come down here and give this their shot.
Yeah.
As most of us did.
Yeah.
Because the truth is, I mean, almost every room I'm ever in, if I ever just say, so where's everybody from? Almost everybody is from somewhere else.
Yeah,
most
Florida,
people
for the
in
most part.
Are from somewhere else. They're not from L.A.
I get being in Florida and wanting to constantly leave Florida. It's one of those things where people look at it and it's so different from what they assume it is, and there's nothing out there that's telling them that it is the way it really is. You look at it and it's glorified. Or when you think, or whenever you talk about a stage parent, the main thing people say is they're living vicariously through their kid, is that they wanted to be an actor and now their kid is talented, they want their kid to be an actor. But it's not usually the case. Usually,
it isn't.
Yeah, usually the case is just they think that their kid is special and their kid wants to be an actor, so... You know, they want to support their kid with whatever he wants.
Yeah, most of the time they're just like good, normal people who are trying to do the right thing by their kids. The special thing is really interesting. You brought this up a couple of times, and as a parent, I have to say, you know, yeah, no doubt. I mean, every child actually is special. Like, every person's special.
Yeah.
Truthfully,
there's
objectively
just billions
speaking,
of us.
The thing is, though, yeah, the fact that each of us is special,
yeah,
most particularly maybe when we're children to our parents, means that is a meaningless measure of whether you should go to Hollywood and try and make it.
Yeah.
Like, that's something that should just be off the table, because guess what? We really are all special.
Yeah, right?
And so are all of our children. So, like, that's not something that should be a consideration. The consideration should be narrower than that.
Yeah, the consideration is, am I willing to potentially put blinders on my child when he's growing up, hoping that he's going to get a job? It's just one of those things. It's such... throwing a ball up in the air and then hoping that you catch it without looking. It's just such a rarity and so something that there's no... Even booking your first job, booking a commercial, that doesn't do anything. Or booking a Disney Channel series.
That's right there. I love that you brought that up. Because every time somebody books something that's exciting to them, whatever their level of that is for them, like, I booked a commercial, or like, oh, I got my own show, or, you know, I mean, there's a lot of different levels of exciting, right? Depending on your experience level. There's a sense as human beings that, like, I'm set now.
Yeah.
I'm here. It's happening. But it's like, it's only happening until it isn't happening anymore.
Yeah.
And then it needs to happen again for that to keep happening.
One of my things that I'm, like, a big proponent for, and I constantly am feeling, is I'm never satisfied. Nothing satisfies me. Every time I am, like, relaxing after, like, I worked 2 14-hour days, Monday and Tuesday, and... Like, this morning, I was sitting, and I had to go get new glasses from Costco, and even getting new glasses from Costco, and then I had an hour and 45 minutes here to relax, and some people say, like, deserve it. You know, you worked 14-hour days for the past 2 days, but when I'm relaxing, I'm constantly feeling like I should be productive. When I'm being productive, I constantly want to be relaxing. Like, there's just this constant battle, and I think that the only way to get done what you want to get done is that you just never feel satisfied.
I was listening to your podcast with Kali
last
night. It's your newest podcast.
Yeah.
I really loved it.
Thank you.
And she brought up, I think, the Twyla Tharp quote about, you know, an artist is never satisfied. I actually laughed out loud because I had that quote. And you were just teasing me about the
quotes.
Quotes
all over your house.
I've got quotes all over my house. You can't see them, but Joey can see them.
You should just have an audiobook of motivational quotes that just constantly goes on a loop.
I might do that.
You
Christmas
should.
Is coming. That's my next project now. Thanks, Joey. But I had that quote literally on my wall for like 10 years.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It's an amazing quote.
It's a good quote.
Yeah, because like feeling satisfied is losing that flame.
It's kind of deaf at a certain level.
Yeah, and I think that there are a lot of kids or a lot of actors that like will get that Nickelodeon show or get that, you know, national commercial, and then think, like, this is it. And there's, first of all, nothing that proves that you're going to ever work after that again.
It's never it.
Yeah, it's never it. It's even people, like, when you think Rachel Harris, for instance. Nobody knows Rachel Harris, for the most part, in middle America. Actors know Rachel Harris. She's great in The Hangover.
She's
amazing.
She's wonderful.
Wonderful. Hilarious lady. But still is hoping for that next job and still doesn't know what's going to happen and still losing roles to girls younger than her because Hollywood is incredibly disgusting on how they look at women. And you know, there's just so many things. There's to be set is something that comes to one in a million people that are working. Not even one in a million people that want to do this.
One in a million who are working.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are people, like, there's some great documentaries. Like, You're the Guy from That Thing is an amazing documentary about character actors and how they got started. And none of them now, you'll know all of their faces, probably not their names. None of them, except J.K. Simmons, which was recorded, that was filmed before Whiplash and all those things. But for the most part, none of them are safe. None of them can pay rent for X amount of years in the future. Living paycheck to paycheck when you never know what job is going to be giving you your next paycheck is something that only a certain amount of people can handle.
Well, you know, I'm a naturally optimistic person. Mm-hmm. That's just how I'm
derived. Pessimistic.
And you're a naturally pessimistic person. And that's part of why I love having your point of view here on the show, because it's like, I think it's extremely important for people to not delude themselves about how genuinely challenging this industry is. It's not a joke.
No.
You know, and it's not a walk in the park.
And it's also something where, I know you were trying to get back on.
That's okay.
I'll be quick. It's something where, it's not something that you can start a child at a young age and then just leave them and hope that they're regular people, because you are taking so much away. Look at Michael Jackson. I know that, I think, based on what Dove thinks about Michael Jackson, I think we probably have different viewpoints on that.
Well, she does love Michael Jackson.
You take a childhood away from somebody and put them in front of people entertaining and put them a bunch of people that are telling them that they're the best person in the world. When they grow up and they no longer have people treating them like that because they're kids, they're going to freak out. And they're not going to understand why they don't have it, because they don't understand that people were treating you like that because you were an adorable little kid dancing around. And when you take somebody's childhood away like that, it has everlasting effects on their adulthood.
I do personally, and I always have, worried the most about the kids who start really young in the industry.
Yeah, because Dove, I mean, events made her come down here, and she was still older than a lot of kids that are down here.
Oh, yeah. We moved here when she was 14 and a half. She didn't get her first gig until she was 15 and a half. She was
A year is very fast to get your first gig.
Oh, yeah. Everybody's like, oh, my God, that's so fast. And at the time, we're thinking, are you kidding?
Yeah, right?
It felt like it was forever.
I know.
Apparently, it was fast. But, like, you know, she was a fully formed human in terms of, like, being grounded in the world. And, yeah, she had some particularly tragic events in her life, and she traveled in third world countries, and, like, she was pretty grounded in reality by the time Hollywood started to be part of that mix.
Yeah.
So I have not worried about her, but I think that your point about kids, especially for me specifically, if they're not fully formed in terms of their identity, like who they are in the world and what that means, before that gets mixed in with the kind of craziness.
No, the identity
of fame,
that will be formed afterwards is.
That's an absolute danger. It's an absolute, very real risk. And yes, there are young kids who begin in the industry and they make it through in one piece, but it's like an absolutely extra risk.
Absolutely.
The younger you are when you start in this industry, I think the more vulnerable you are.
Yeah, and people look at, like, Drew Barrymore and say, oh, Drew, look at Drew Barrymore. She was a child star and she's now a very well-rounded person.
Oh, but good God, she barely made it.
And there's also a big difference between doing a movie here and there when you're a little girl and then being on a Disney Channel show, or being on a sitcom, or doing something like that.
She also was in rehab, like, 12 or something.
Of course.
Like, I know I'm getting that number wrong, but she was extremely young.
That would be a fun age to be in rehab.
Oh, my God.
But
and by the way, I have very high regard for her, but she did not have an easy path. Actually.
Nobody has an easy path. I mean, look at Ryan Gosling was in the Mickey Mouse Club, still, years before people started talking about him regularly, and he is now late 30s, I don't know, early 40s. And working constantly and as an amazing actor, but it took a long, long, long time. And in that meantime, when you weren't talking about Ryan Gosling, he was struggling.
Yeah.
And he was worried about what the next job was going to be. It's just kind of one of those things that, I don't know, more trouble, not more trouble than it's worth. Because when you do get to that point, it's an amazing feeling. And when you want to be that creative person and getting your voice out there and having people that want to listen to your voice is the most rewarding thing in the world. But it's one of those things where it's just not for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of people that can't take it.
So what has surprised you about this journey?
Ooh. I think I was surprised at how moving to LA was different than I thought. Because, you know, you find more people that are putting on, like, I mean, Billy Joel's The Stranger feels like it was written about people in Hollywood. Like, there are just so many different characters. And they're not people. They're, like, characters. And meeting different agents that are, you know, you're blowing smoke up somebody until, you know, they agree to sign with you, and then you're like, buddy, and that, but you know that as soon as that phone is hung up, that they are not talking the same way that they were just talking to you. Or you run into somebody that really wants to be an actor but is working at Quiznos and is being like a really nice forward guy. It's just, there's no, the disingenuousness. Or disingenuity?
No, disingenuousness. It sounds weird, but that's the correct word.
Yeah, disingenuousness of the people in Hollywood was probably the biggest surprise. Mm-hmm. Because meeting somebody that is absolutely themselves is very, very, very rare. And you find that in a lot of people that found success through other means, like stand-up or writing. You find it through a lot of people that got success by, you know, being, having to find their own voice or having to work really hard as opposed to somebody that was handed to them. And there's a lot of kids that didn't work very hard, that's either parents worked really hard. I mean, my dad drove me to comedy clubs every night. And, like, he wasn't writing my jokes. He was pretty much, like, he would drive me and then he would stand back. And I am so grateful that he did that because, like, he wasn't a parent when we were there. He was just, I mean, I'm not trying to demean his parenting skills, but he was there and he would let me figure it out. And, you know, if you want to be this kid in an adult world, then you're going to be treated like an adult. And you're going to have to, you know, take those things. And I made horrible mistakes. And everybody makes horrible mistakes. But, like, at 15, if I had somebody talking crap about me or somebody accused me of stealing a joke, I wouldn't take the high road. And I would, you know, send them a horribly written email. And it's that kind of thing that a lot of people have to have. And I think that that kind of taught me so many lessons. And the fact that my parents let me figure it out as opposed to, you know, breathing down my neck every chance they got, I think helped me a lot. And there are so many parents that I see that don't let their kids experience the negativeness and only let them see the positive side of it. And then when their parents, you know, take a step back and they see the negative thing, it has a much bigger effect on them.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of experiential parenting.
Yeah.
You know, I really am. I think the kids learn very powerfully that way. And yeah, you got to be there as a safety net. You don't, like, just throw them out.
Oh, no. Yeah, he wasn't like he just walked away when I was at a comic club. He was still standing in the back.
He was there.
But at least he was in the back.
How can people find you on social media?
I'm at Joey Bragg, JoeyBragg, pretty much on everything. And then Facebook, it's like Joey Bragg Comedy. But if you search Joey Bragg, I'm the verified one with the hot face.
That's how you know it's not one of those fake ones.
Yeah.
And then how do people find your podcast?
Just go to dudesoffuturepast.com, and it's all there.
Also on iTunes, right?
Yeah, it's on iTunes. It's on anywhere podcasts are found, except Spotify, because Spotify is stupid.
On the record.
Yeah, good. I'm glad.
Joey, thank you for taking the time.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for wanting me to talk.
Thanks for listening to Hometown to Hollywood. If you like what you heard here, please subscribe. It's free. Go to my website, hollywoodparentsguide.com, and click on the subscribe button. You'll get weekly podcasts and blog posts delivered right to your inbox that will educate and inspire you. And if you need help figuring out just how to navigate the career of a young actor, buy my book, The Hollywood Parents Guide, on Amazon. Or for one-on-one coaching that can save you literally thousands of dollars and months and years of wasted time, book an hour consultation with me over Skype or in LA. Just go to hollywoodparentsguide.com and click on the consultation page. For the same price of an hour with an acting coach, you can get peace of mind and a detailed action plan. Thanks. Remember, the future belongs to those who believe in their dreams.